Hard Facts. Hard Facts with Dion.
Hello, welcome back to Hard Facts 91.3 Nigeria Info in Herringbone Harcourt. I'm Dio. Happy New Year to you once again. Thanks for staying tuned and joining the conversation this year. It's 9 minutes come past 4 p.m. Conversation continues. And in this hour, as I mentioned at the start of today's show, we're going to be analysing the River State Governor's statewide broadcast. That's the statewide broadcast by His Excellency Governor Yesu Mwike to mark the 2022 New Year. And we're going to be taking has been characteristic of the president's statement or addresses. They're usually numbered in points, if you will. And we're going to be taking each number of points as they have been drafted and as was delivered by the governor when he did so. Number one, I think, to number 63, are the total numbers of points put up in all, and we're going to be taking a look at all of these. Hopefully we'll have the time to run through the entire address in this hour till about 5 o'clock. My guest, and a few things to note here. Well, primarily, I'm sure there are several talking points as far as the president, the governor's address is concerned, pardon me, and we'll get to those talking points. But mainly, does the governor's speech address the concerns of Rivers residents? Does it offer any hope? Does it are there specified solutions to some of the challenges identified? Do they bear a mark of the possibility of resolving those issues? And did he even address all of those concerns raised as well? These are another matters we're going to be looking at. I've got two gentlemen with me in the studio to conduct this analysis. I've got Henry Ekine, he's a legal advisor with the Committee for the Defense of Human Rights. Henry, you're welcome. Happy New Year to you.
Happy New Year to you, Dio, and thank you for having me here again.
Also, we've got Olalekan Ige in the studio. He's the editor with Independent Monitor. Lekan Reti Javier, happy New Year to you as well.
Yeah, happy New Year, Dio, and happy New Year to Rivers people out there.
Welcome, gentlemen. You're both going to be my first guest for the year 2022.
Oh.
And no other persons are more qualified to be in the studio right now and have this conversation. Thanks for always being there in the year 2021 when called upon to talk for development. And thank you for keeping true to that calling and keeping faith even being here right now as well.
Well, thank you, Dio, for always having us. And it's good to always, you know, offer our opinions on the way forward, you know, for a better humanity and, of course, for the growth and development of Nigeria as a nation.
And thank you, Dio, and your management for the platform.
Thank you very much. Let's get straight to it then. Let's see, back to the very top. Mm-hmm. Just a moment. Oh, here we are. A statewide broadcast by His Excellency Governor Yesu Mwike to mark the 2022 New Year. My dear people of River State, as the clock ticks down and as we look forward to the ushering in the new year 2022, this is the time to give thanks to the Almighty God for His blessings and the opportunity to look into the future with greater hope and optimism. On behalf of my wife and the government, I thank all River State citizens and in particular Nigerians in general for your continued love and support to our administration throughout the year 2021. Now, to number three, indeed, we cannot thank you enough for the trust, solidarity, cooperation, and above all, your prayers for the success of our government and the peace and progress of our state. We also thank the police, the DSS, the armed forces, the paramilitary services for working around the clock to make and keep our district peaceful, safe, and secure. Nothing extraordinary about the first 4 points, simply thanking everybody, unsurprisingly, as usual, as expected rather. Number five, indeed there is no denying the fact that crime and criminality have been at very low rates in River State, and citizens felt safer and more secure in 2021 than the previous years. So the corporation or security agencies, we identified and destroyed most of the shanties that hitherto served as safe havens and hideouts of poor criminals who have now been dislodged and dislocated from the state, having lost the space and capacity from which they could operate with E7. To consolidate the gains of the dislodgement and dislocation exercises and make the state even safer and more secure, we have decided to demolish all shanties and makeshift structures and identified crime hotspots in Port Harcourt Township and the Iluabuchi areas of Diob from the second week of January 2022. But still 8 and 9 talking about those rebuilding shanties should be demolished. 9, additionally, we discovered most vacant plots or uncompleted buildings in the old GRA. Okay, we'll come to that in a bit. Let's talk about the issue of security the governor talked about for a moment. He said basically he's saying there's been a major reduction in crime, criminality in River State. People feel safer. This is due to the efforts of security agents and the government as well by demolishing what they described as shanties, which served as safe havens for criminals in some parts of the state. Do you agree with the governor? Have we witnessed a remarkable reduction in criminal activities in River State? And do we make considerable progress in that regard? Let's start with Lekong.
Well, I think, excuse me, please, that's arguable and it's relative, so to say. Unfortunately, we couldn't have the records of 2020 to be able to compare to 2021. But if we judge from the last 30 days, especially throughout the Yuletide season, I think I would say that look over the relative peace, relative security in the state, quite a whole lot of events, you know, took place in River State in December, particularly breaking into the new year, and we've hardly heard of any major incident, so to say, especially even in areas where people considered to be hotspots, you know. We've had relative peace and security during the December axis. So I would have loved if we had the previous, you know, data. It's always good when we make comparisons. We're able to make available data. For example, if we had 200 incidents in 2020 and we now have 100 incidents in 2021, then it gives us a fair idea to judge, to determine whether we've had reduced crime or not. But relatively, I think it's been a fair year in 2021.
Andre?
Oh, yes. I think it's about the first time I've really read or heard the governor really applauding the security agencies to that level in this state. And I think they really deserve that, because much of what we have had really has been this contestation and confrontation, and probably how the security agencies are perceived as compromising in most cases to a large extent. But really, I haven't come open this time to appreciate the effort they really are putting in to ensuring security. And I think really I agree that relatively, particularly in consideration of the social activities that actually went on in December and now, the security agencies deserve that kind of applause.
And like Lekong said, we may not have any data in that regard. Well, I think sometimes you can also assess situations based on what on the street.
Perception.
And I think also that there is a pervading perception or prevailing perception that there has been a drop in crime, I think. And I mean, Lekong especially being a pressman himself, of course, he has his ear to the ground. And I think Lekong would agree as well that what on the street is, it seems there has been a reduction in crime.
Yeah, that's why I made a specific example of December. I remember a lot of people traveled out of Port Harcourt. That also meant that there were less number of people within the city of the capital, and they are joining local government areas. And when you dissolve all of the population, some of the population that left Port Harcourt as a capital to some of the villages and towns, you know, within state, and the huge number of activities that took place in the state, and we've not heard of any major breach of, you know, security or insecurity anywhere, then it gives you a fair idea of how 2021 has traveled, you know, in River State. One major area you could also talk about was the issue of kidnapping. I think we didn't have as much pronounced of kidnapping we had in previous years, like 2021. And in terms of functions of events, of, you know, things generally happening in the state, you could say yes, relatively we had a better 2021. And that's why I was trying to make a reference, you know, to usually when we say things like this, let's back it up with data, that we were able to sell it out to say, look, in 2020, this is what we had in terms of a database for crime in the state. In 2021, this is what we have that are verifiable as crime database, you know, in the state in 2021. That way, we're able to make comparisons. But over and above all of this consideration is that, look, we've had a relatively crime-free last quarter of 2021.
For number nine, he talked about uncompleted or vacant plots in GRA, old GRA, new GRA. Some of these completed buildings have been hijacked, been inhabited by criminal elements. Number 10, we've decided to end this danger by taking over all such abandoned plots and uncompleted buildings and reallocate them to citizens who are ready to develop and put them into effective occupancy. 11, in a similar vein, we've revoked the certificate of occupancy of several undeveloped plots of land in OGRA Port Harcourt for breaching the covenant attached thereto, which we would also reallocate to interested members of the public for immediate development as part of the ongoing efforts to restore the entire OGRA. 12, we will also not spare those contributing to the perennial flooding challenge in part of Port Harcourt City and Obiak political government area by blocking natural water and drainage channels with illegal landfilling, reclamation of wetlands and the construction of concrete structures. 13, consequently, we shall recover and restore all landfill or reclaimed wetlands and demolish all structures erected on rural natural water channels spanning from the eastern bypass areas up to Abana and Elimish Street in Old GRA Port Harcourt. Only those with genuine government permit and allocation papers will be duly compensated. Now, for me, a few matters here. Every problem identified here by the governor, you can probably find in every local government area in River State. But once again, it appears that there is a fixation on Port Harcourt and Obiakpo. And even beyond that, the governor narrowed in to old GRA and new GRA. I mean, those problems persist elsewhere as well. Does that help the governor's cause in any way when he has been accused severally of focusing entirely, not even just somewhat, but entirely on Obiakpo and Falga? And also, the issue of taking people's properties. I mean, if I have a piece of land and I'm not able to develop for whatever reason, have I violated any law? And because maybe some criminal elements use that for whatever purposes, does that give government the right to take my land from me forcefully? I'll start with you, Henry.
Thank you.
On those 2 points.
Yes, I think I was even going to say this when we analyzed the security issues, that some of the analysis are actually center-based here in Port Harcourt, Obiakpo, and probably the adjoining local governments. But we never were able to assess the security situation at the community areas. I wouldn't have known what happened in my village, even if it's open fight, street fight, but they still deserve some security protection. The same way, now, these issues, like you mentioned, they are here, but I think for me, from my background, my concern will be more about the rights of citizens in this kind of declarations and bans and would I say threats of acquisition of property of people. I've always said that there's a legal procedure to doing this, and then there must also be a reasonable and lawful justification for doing this. I've always, it's the world over, not just about me. Habitat has actually said that the excuse of crime and criminality, sanitation and health issues, and of course probably indecent environment for the demolition of certain settlements is condemnable. It's not acceptable. So the same here, where government will continually lean on the excuse of criminals, suspected criminals are probably having heaven somewhere, and then so you want to probably demolish shanties in areas of the city, or compulsorily acquire or reallocate people's property. I am not sure that the Land Use Act, together with the conditions and terms that are usually on the face of the certificate of occupancy, includes where if your property is probably being infiltrated by criminals, that it's a ground for you to lose your allocation. It is not one of those. I had listened to this and immediately looked at, could there be anyone that is close to these grounds that the government is threatening to probably reallocate, or rather take back lands that were properly allocated and then reallocate to others? Maybe what is probably close to that is that there is a condition that when you are given a certificate of occupancy, that within a certain period you should develop it. Now, if you are actually also democratic and liberal and inquire into why aren't people really developing, you probably will find some very reasonable excuses, and that may also probably account to the responsibility of government. So I think the proclamation of the threats to probably forcefully acquire people's property. And what we have seen over time is that when they really go through that, there's usually no compensation, legal procedures not actually followed, no arrangement for resettlement. Especially my concern goes really for those who have been threatened around the Chantis in town, Iluabushi, in Port Harcourt Township and all that. You don't have an alternative arrangement for accommodation for them. It's against their right. You do not also even imagine the displacement that you would have created and caused, and of course other issues of adequate housing and all of that. So they are actually threats to the rights of citizens.
Okay.
Well, I think I would agree completely with him. And just to say that, look, I think also under the Land Use Act, I think there is a provision that gives the governor power to take over certain properties, but there's a caveat to it, is that it must be for public good. You understand? So in this case, what would be the public good? I think it would be more appealing if the governor can actually, you know, look at those who hold the titles and maybe find out from there what's really the problem. Is it that you're no longer interested in the land? Is it for financial deficit or something? I think it's something that we need to look at, and this could as well, you know, open up the state for fresh litigations. I'm sure a lot of people want to approach the courts, as guaranteed by the Constitution of the Federal Republic of Nigeria, to say, look, court, can you determine whether the governor of the state has the powers to just unilaterally, you know, take over my land without compensation or without finding out from me what's really the problem and all of that. I think it's a delicate one, really, and it would be helpful if the governor can, you know, look at these things and probably call some of the title holders and find out what's really the problem. In terms of flooding and all of that, you know, it will take a long time. And that, you know, one of the things that encourages impunity in Nigeria is that people don't get punished for the offenses they commit. A lot of the flooding issues that we have in Port Harcourt, even in Obiakpo, are not caused by poor people. Some of them are caused by very rich people who knowingly build on water channels, and who gave the certificate, who gave the permission to build. It's also from the government agencies. So you begin to understand that some of the flooding issues don't have to do with poor people all the time, even though you could say a sizable number of us too are also guilty of dumping refuse into the drains. But what has continued to encourage all of this is because people don't get punished for it. That is just the truth. Otherwise, it would be difficult, I mean really difficult, for us to control the attitude of people. If you read further down the governor's speech, he talked about waste disposal, banning of cart pushers and all of that. Truly, Dayo, banning of cart pushers will not work. Let's look at it very well. There are so many streets in Port Harcourt that building to buildings waste evacuation cannot work.
That's the issue of refuse and waste management in a moment.
Yes, okay.
But let's move on now to number 14. It's important to appreciate we've done successfully transformed our capital city, Port Harcourt, to one of the most beautiful cities in Nigeria. Well-paved streets, pedestrian walkways, dual carriage roads and flyovers. However, the beauty of the city is being defaced by illegal indiscriminate trading on our streets, under flyovers and other unauthorized open spaces. 16, I wish to therefore remind citizens that the ban on street trading and commuting on motorcycles in Port Harcourt and Obiakpo local government areas is still in force. 17, consequently, I hereby direct the task force on illegal street trading to arrest and prosecute all those, 1, shuttling with their motorcycles and or hawking for an exchange along Birabi Street, Hotel Presidential, GRA Junction, by Zenith Bank up to Tombia Street, 2, trading on under, around Rumola Junction, flyover, Rumogba Junction, flyover, as well as Rumokoro Junction, and fly of security personnel abetting illegal street trading by collecting bribes, offering protection to the street vendors, advice to the cease forthwith would equally be made to face the wrath of the law. And then he talks about cart pushers as well. Minutes of cart pushers who have become notorious for indiscriminate scavenging and leaching of waste on the street corners and the medians of major roads and highways across the state. The cart pushers and their unknown collaborators are also responsible for the recurring stealing of manhole covers, an act which endangers people's lives and public safety. Consequently, the state government has placed an immediate ban on the activities of cart pushers and directs law enforcement agents to arrest and prosecute anyone who attempts to violate this ban. Let's talk about this, the issue of street trading. Obviously, it's one thing that the Rivers State government, or maybe the governor in particular, is very concerned about. So much so that he set up a task force specifically given the mandate to address that. However, how successful that task force has been remains debatable completely, because I mean the traders are still there anyways, and even the actions or the modus operandi of the task force have been called to question as well. It's also interesting to know that these people who trade at these places are paying to somebody or some persons, usually state actors. They can't be non-state actors, I suppose, who collect these taxes or tariffs or levies or rent from these persons who conduct their trade, what they do. So what do you make of... And why has the state not been able to successfully address this matter of street trading?
No state in Nigeria can successfully address the issue of street trading. Let's call it spade a spade. No state. Let me give you an example. I stayed somewhere in Rumodara. Every evening, especially from 5 p.m., you see people trading right on the median, on the middle of the express road. So one night, I parked my car and decided to ask them, why do they decide to trade on the median? And I was shocked. They said they pay 500 naira every night to community boys to trade. So you can begin to understand why banning street trading would be very difficult. Not just in River State, anywhere in Nigeria. Remember that the increasing economic hardship is forcing a lot of people to go out to look for means of livelihood. And people want to survive at all costs. Some don't want to take into crime. And the best way they think they don't want to take into crime is to look for legitimate business to do. So why don't I trade? Especially in the evenings. Why don't I trade on the road? So you have community boys who collect money from them. Some of the task force members have also been accused, of giving protection. Even the governor mentioned it in his speech, that some of the task force members have been accused of giving protection to even the street traders to trade at certain periods, at certain times, when they have paid protection money. Number three is, now, even the task force, what is their strength? Are they up to 100? Are they up to 1,000? Port Harcourt is a huge place. Not to talk of joining Obiakwa to Port Harcourt, LMA to Port Harcourt, because these are contiguous local government. Oyigbo is there, LMA is there, Igrita is there, MOI is there. These are contiguous local governments to Port Harcourt, and you see the influx of people. I'm sure you know that there are people who leave Aba to trade in Port Harcourt and go back to Aba every evening. So it's going to be difficult, really, to control street trading. Maybe the way forward might be to look for a space, a bigger space, acquire a bigger space, and be able to put everybody into an enclosure and say, look, rather than you trade on the street, we have provided so amount of space for you people to go and trade. But it's going to be very difficult to control street trading. It's not going to go away, really. It's already part and parcel of our living. Then we now have to find a way to control them. Can we acquire bigger spaces in different areas and ensure that, look, we put all of them inside? Even in areas where you have built up markets, do people really want to trade even inside the market? And that brings me back to the issue of enforcement. How do you enforce? The best way to enforce is to ensure that people get punished for violating certain rules. Do people get punished?
Yeah, the task force guys throw their words away.
But the law setting up the task force. There's a law setting up the task force. Says that, look, if you are found guilty of violating the law, you should be made to face the magistrate. How many of them have we taken before the magistrate? Even if you take them before the magistrate, are we not going to further congest the already over congested Port Harcourt prison? Because the rule would that, look, if you face the magistrate and you are unable to pay for your fine or nobody is there to bail you, they might remind you in the Port Harcourt Correctional Center that is already overcrowded already. So there's a whole lot that we need to put on the table if we are to tackle the issue of street trading. It's a tough one, really, Dio.
Henry, you're taking this, and also the issue of markets. Even like Lekan mentioned, even places where we have the ultra modern international Rumokoro market over there.
Underutilized.
Exactly. I even hear
what is on the road.
I even hear that some people have turned some of the places there to Roman Palo. So why are we not getting it right?
I think that's another direction. I haven't heard Lekan on this and then spoken really to the facts. I think it's about maybe a few of the solutions that I think government should have thought in those directions. A city as metropolitan as Port Harcourt, as vast as Port Harcourt, as populous as Port Harcourt, and of course they are joining local governments. How many markets do we have? What are the sizes of the markets? So that even before we begin to crucify those who are eking a living, like he said, truly, the definition of the essence of a man, of a human being, it's survival. Livelihood. You've got to eat. And unfortunately, we do not have a welfare system in our government that thinks about any individual. So the elderly, you go there, you see women who are aged, while the fundamental objectives and directive principles of state policy in our constitution enjoin the government to provide for those category of citizens. But you don't do that, and then this old woman thinks that one way to make a living is to do some little trade. That is not to justify illegality. But before you address these issues, government is expected to be on the balance, not just to come and then seek to punish the people all the time. What do you do? Where are the markets? Some of the markets that they've even constructed have not been opened for more than a year. You probably would imagine some persons that may be absorbed into the my one market. Then the size of market we have today aren't such that can accommodate all of these persons. And traditionally, we have grown even in our communities and in our own pattern of trading. The evening market thing is a thing that even our grandparents have been disposed to. So why not we rather organize it instead of fights that, most of these traders, I agree with him, come probably in the eves of the days, not really in the work days. So if we have a problem with those who are turning the streets into market, perhaps at the time that traffic will be high, then can't we have market marshals rather than these tax forces that are confrontational, that the reports and the results we've got is about punishment? Can't we get some other strategy to say, okay, we have market marshals who will organize these people, these traders, and say, okay, you trade at this time and you organize in this pattern, and then you clean up the area after trading. You can have a decent market, even if it's an informal market, on the street market. I believe in the city of London, you have street market.
Sure.
So it is about how we organize these things. And again, we talked about, maybe the people themselves. There is nobody who ordinarily would want to be indecent in his behavior, particularly even in what affects him. So I think generally, government should begin to look at areas of addressing issues more liberally and addressing issues with the focus of preferring solution, not banning, not constituting task force. You remember that there's in one of the paragraphs, it's talking about considering another task force. That's in respect to the cat pushers. Mm. So we're soon going to have a task force for cat pushers. And what then would be the mandate and the responsibility of that task force that is quite far or different from the already existing task force of against street trading and all of that? So we need to be a little more strategic in some of these decisions.
We will be addressing the issue of the cart pushers in a moment. I want to lump it also with the issue of waste management in River State, which comes up in one of the points close to where we are right now. However, we have to go for a quick commercial break. We'll return in a moment. My guest will still be here as we continue the analysis of the River State Governor's New Year message to residents of River State. Please stay tuned. Hard Fast returns shortly.
We take off with the biggest conversations with an exchange of opinions and ideas on the Morning Crossfire.
Settle you into your day when we say hello, Podhackers.
Take you on a ride to the sunny side of life.
Hover a bit while picking at the details on hard facts.
Take a detour through the exciting world of sports.
And get back on track with Let's Talk. Let's talk.
Land you safely as we chit-chat into the morning on Chat Station.
Chat Station.
And then do it all over again on your number one talk, news and sports radio station, 92.3 Nigeria Info.
And welcome back to Hard Factor 91.3 Nigeria Info. Harry Port Harcourt, I'm Dio. 20 to go before 5 o'clock. The analysis of the River State Governor's New Year's Day address. Governor Yesen Wike continues right now. My guests are still with me here in the studio, Olaleko Ige and Henry Akine. Gentlemen, you're welcome once again.
Thank you, Dio.
Thank you, Dio.
So let's get back to it. I think we are at about number 21. Yeah. Consequently, the state government has placed an immediate ban on the cart pushers. I think we read that a while ago. 22. In addition, the task force will be put in place to enforce this ban while we plead with the courts in the interest of public safety and security to impose the severest punishment under the law on any convicted manhole vandal. The indiscriminate and prolonged parking of trailers and other articulated vehicles along our streets is another environmental menace we must tackle to bring sanity to our cities and living environment. Consequently, I hereby direct the chairman of Port Harcourt, Ikuri, Obiakpo and Oyigbo to, within 3 weeks from today, impound and remove any trailer, trucks or articulated vehicle parked on the streets beyond 48 hours in the respective administrative jurisdictions. 25, as we all know, achieving effective environmental sanitation in cities and urban centers is a global challenge, and ours is not an exception. 26, however, we're determined to improve on our refuse disposal system by reviewing, overhauling, and strengthening the legal, institutional, and economic framework for a more effective delivery of sanitation services to residents. I urge that to bear with us for a while, and things will certainly change for the better in our refuse disposal system. So obviously the governor identifies that there is a gross lapse.
Yes.
As anyways, every other person has identified before now, as far as waste management in River State is concerned. Andrew, I'll start with you now.
Yes.
The governor is talking about another task force again to address just cart pushers. What do you make of that? Is that going to be a solution? I mean, some of them do pose a threat, no doubt, with the issue of manhole covers. Now, quite personally, and this is a personal opinion, I don't think cart pushers are the only ones. I was looking for a word just a while ago. But the only ones responsible for manhole cover stealing. You know, I think different people, even community boys, can also steal manhole covers. But maybe some cart pushers have been identified specifically or seen doing that, and that poses a threat. Something must be done about that. But is the task force going to be the solution to it? And also this situation with refuse, because even though the governor talked about it, he mentioned and said we'll find a way, it doesn't seem like he offered any or proposed any solutions even to the refuse crisis or waste management crisis we have in River State.
And that's been my worry in all of these, really. You identify the challenges and then not much about real strategic solutions to them. Well, I leave that to government. It's their responsibility, but for us is to talk and draw their attention to it. But the duplication of task forces and what we have come to know of the behaviors and the inadequacies and excesses of task forces, I think it's just going to be another one to add to the troubles of citizens in this city. And again, I would ask a question rhetorically: is it an economy? And then if it is it a legitimate economy? I mean, those who are making a living from pushing carts and probably collecting waste like Igego, even in my compound where I live in town, is a cart pusher that comes to take the waste and then disposes of the waste. Now, are there legitimate cart pushers who are doing responsible business as an economy, and then you just want to arbitrarily shut down that economy because some persons are allegedly thieves? Now, if people are stealing some item of state or some particular material, how are they actually attributable to cart pushers? Absolutely not in suspicion. Or is it because that when you pull off the manhole, the steel, you have to push it or you have to carry it? What about the man who probably could drive his vehicle to that point and find a way and put in the vehicle and go? So if we get the cart pushers off the streets, where are they going to go to? Just as we've always been proclaiming, we proclaim and ban one this and ban one that. We don't bother about what happens with them. What about if tomorrow we still see these manholes being taken, perhaps by people driving to them? Because still now is good business. So I think for me, it's not quite a solution about really the outright ban, and of course to set up another task force only for monitoring cart pushers. That is, if they will come out, because we've banned them. If that ban is going to be practical and it's going to be really enforceable and obeyed, then what would the task force be doing to ensure that people who are going to continue in that endeavor are not doing that? Then what will happen? What law? What prosecution? So these are fundamental questions that I think for me, I am watching out and I'm going to be asking when eventually these proclamations are going to put into effect.
Going to be practically impossible, Dio, to chase the cart pushers off the streets. And I say so advisedly and with experience too. Remember that there are a lot of streets, you know, in Port Harcourt that the compactors cannot get to. the governor did talk about trying to review the legal and some other frameworks about the law setting up the WAMA, which I'm sure the governor may also be reflecting upon. Because if you look at the services of the cat pushers, they are very crucial in the waste management chain. There are areas that are so hard to assess. It is these cat pushers who go to houses, get paid for the service they render by evacuating the refuse from respective homes and take it to the receptacles created by Rewama. Now, it means that they occupy a very creditable value along the waste management chain. I would have suggested that, look, is it possible that we register all the cat pushers? Can we give them a specific number? Can we give them, or can we assign a particular area to them in Port Harcourt such that if anything gets missing, especially manholes, if they get missing in this area, you should be inviting all the cat pushers in that area to say, look, do you know anything about this? Do you know what could have gone on? It's difficult, really, if you look at the service the cat pushers provide. And if we are to devolve, you know, refuse collection at the moment. At the moment, the River State government has refuse contractors that have been assigned specific areas in Port Harcourt, Biapo, Oyigbo, some parts of Ikwere, some parts of Eleme. If you are to devolve them and say, let's assign specific areas to them, it means that they now have to start doing a street-to-street collection. I think the governor has alluded to that. To be able to do street-to-street collection of waste, what modalities have been put in place? Because if, for example, somebody wants to take, say, Umosi, for example, as his own area of waste collection, it means that refuse contractor will first of all do enumeration. He needs to know the number of houses and the number of residents that stay in Umosi. Even in allocating Umosi to a refuse contractor, there's no way the compactor can enter every street that is inside Umosi. Some are so narrow that the compactor cannot enter. So he needs the service, you know, of a cart pusher to be able to bring the waste down to a major road where they can do collection. I think it needs a lot of rejigging, really. And I know that in trying to look at the law setting up program, I'm sure these are the areas where the government may have to look at. Waste management is a serious business. And like most of us have argued, it shouldn't be done for free, which is what the River State government is doing at the moment. River State government, according to the governor, spends about $500 million every month for waste management in metropolitan Port Harcourt, including Port Harcourt, Biapo, some parts of Ikwere, some parts of Emoa, some parts of Oyibo, some parts of Eleme, $500 million every month. Why don't you throw this thing open for entrepreneurs to take charge of? Why don't you allocate certain areas to certain people who have the competence and the credibility to be able to do house-to-house collection of waste and get paid for their services? I'm sure these are some of the things we need to look at going forward.
Mm-hmm. All right. Also, let's go to number 28. As an initial step towards, I think this still has to do with refuse collection. As an initial step towards achieving this objective, we have placed an immediate ban on the disposal of refuse on the streets or open spaces in both the old and new GRS of Port Harcourt and Obiakpo local government areas. Every household in both old and new GRS must therefore procure and keep approved refuse disposal bins at the front of their houses to facilitate the door-to-door collection of the waste they generate by designated contractors. We will not hesitate to revoke the certificate of occupancy of any house in these areas without a refuse disposal bin or whose occupants are caught disposing refuse on the streets or open spaces. Now, once again, the issue of people disposing of waste in open spaces is not peculiar to Port Harcourt, to Obiakpo, or even GRA only. Right here along the East West Road, between here and Rumusi Junction, you have designated points, in quotes, where refuse are being dumped every single day. And the contractors come there, drive along in the evenings to collect, even posing quite a traffic nuisance at the Rumusi Junction over there, because they park at the intersection, you know, going to Rumekini as well. The taxi drivers there don't help the matter. So that's why there's a perpetual traffic situation at Rumusi Junction every evening. That's besides the obvious eyesore and health hazard that the refuse littering the median poses as well. So once again, I asked a question I asked earlier on, which wasn't really addressed. Is there a fixation on GRA? Maybe because, you know, very important people live there. But also, can not having a refuse bin in front of your house be grounds for having your house taken from you?
that would be an alien law. Yeah, not yet probably enacted by the River Senators of Assembly. And like I said, even when we discussed the other issue about revocation of certificates of occupancy and then reassigned, it is not one of those conditions at all, even on the face of the document, not in the Land Use Act, and not anywhere in any reasonable law, at least not yet a law. So if it happens, then it's arbitrary. If it happens, it's unlawful, and of course, it will be a violation of the rights of those citizens. And in this case, we're talking about someone who, not like the clause 3, usually on the certificate of occupancy, that talks about you must develop within a certain period. In this case, you have developed your house, then that you probably are not managing your refuse in some particular manner, and then government can... Is it that one of the agenda of government is to, as much as possible, acquire property of persons or citizens?
Mop up houses
and property. Find a way to acquire property of citizens by force. And again, forceful eviction, forceful acquisition or compulsory acquisition of property are apparent violation of rights of citizens, especially even when you do not follow the procedures of law and when it's not justified as well. Well, the other time we mentioned the excuses of crime and criminality not being justifiable, let alone this one will be really, really novel in the entire world, that by reason of probably not managing your waste properly, that the government of a state can come and compulsorily acquire a house and revoke a certificate of occupancy. It's going to be a floodgate for litigation, really.
Yeah, I think it's not going to work, really. It will be difficult. You know, the governor does have the powers as guaranteed by the Constitution of the Federal Republic of Nigeria, but it's also subjected to certain interpretations. And like I said earlier, we might be opening up several litigations, you know, between the state and whoever that owns some of those residences. But in truth is that, look, there is absolutely no reason why any house should not have a waste bin. There's absolutely no reason. If you go to the Rwanda law, I think there's a fine, there's a specified fine, you know, that is in that law. If you are found guilty, I think there's an amount of money you're supposed to pay, or a term of imprisonment or so, for not having a refuse bin in your house. So, and of course, I see no reason to why any decent house in GRE, either old or new GRE, should not have a waste bin. I don't think they need the prompting of the governor, you know, to remind them that they should have waste bin. I don't think that there are people inside old or, you know, new GRE that will have their houses. You've built houses worth hundreds of millions of naira. And to buy a waste bin of less than 15, 20,000 should be a problem. I don't think they need the governor to remind them to have such a facility. And I'm sure the governor is just re-emphasizing the fact that, look, they need to have these things. Although it would be shocking that if you go to anybody's house in GRE and the person doesn't have a waste bin, there was a sense of staying in the house.
But shouldn't we have waste bins in Rumosi as well?
What I'm saying is one of the problems is also the fact that, look, I think the state government has also taken upon its own shoulders responsibilities of local government. You understand? Mm-hmm. These are basic functions of what local government should be doing. For example, the governor did talk about removing trailers that have been parked on the road. Does the governor need to remind local government chairman that is part of their responsibility? You understand? This is also why a lot of people have said, look, local government have also collapsed. Otherwise, those are part of the basic functions of local governments. I'm only saying that, look, the state governor or the government is just taking more than enough on its own shoulders. Otherwise, that is what the local government should have been able to do. Local government chairman, you go to along the Azikiwe Road, passing, heading towards Spa, you see trailers parked on the road. Go to Port Harcourt, Oyibo, Aba Expressway, you see a lot of trailers parked indiscriminately on the road. I think not too long ago, so when they had to forcefully remove those, they were causing huge traffic on Emoa, Aouda, you know, Express Road on East-West Road. You know, these are responsibilities of local government. They didn't need to wait for the governor to remind them of the fact that, look, they need to keep roads clear and safe for people who reside in those local governments. And it's because the state government has taken over a lot of the responsibilities of the local government. That's why a lot of them are not doing much in terms of what is their core response. Even the issue of street trading and not the rest should be the function of local government. Building of markets is one of the basic functions of local governments in Nigeria. So you begin to understand why the government may be emphasizing these things, and is already warning the governors. I saw a video not too long ago of Obiakpo local government chairman being on the road and talking to truck drivers to move these trucks away from the road and all of that. So it's already following the directives of the governor, but all other local government chairmen should take a cue from what the governor said and perform their responsibilities.
Gentlemen, on that note, we have to end the conversation. We've gone, I think, about halfway. We are point number 30 right now. Number 31 comes next. We're going all the way to 63. But as envisaged, we obviously cannot cover the entire or do justice to the analysis if we want to cover the entire thing today. So I implore or I beseech you, brethren, to be on the show tomorrow as well as we have a part two of this analysis. I have the word on that.
You spoke as if you were in the spirit, and if the Holy Spirit is directing, who am I?
Yeah, I can only say that no problem. I would forward the details of my domiciliary account to you and do justice, you know.
Who is back pulling you? On that note, we'll wrap it up. Many thanks for being a part of the conversation. We will continue this analysis tomorrow. Thanks for being a part of it, especially my guest, Olale Koenigis, editor with the Independent Monitor. Henry Kine is a legal advisor with the Committee for the Defense of Human Rights. Gentlemen, many thanks for your time.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Dio.